Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf Yomi, which is Shabbos Daf Kuf Mem Gimel, on Daf Kuf Mem Beis Mem Beis, three lines from the bottom. It says, Gemara Tama de Chazi L'Umtza. The Gemara related a story where Rava placed a knife, which is a non-muksa object, on a bar yoina, on a small bird, a raw bird. And Rava said, not to worry. Technically speaking, this bird wasn't even muktza. She placed the knife on it in order to move it. But he said, really? I didn't need to place the knife on it because this bird was never really muktza to begin with, since it's suitable for consumption. One can eat the soft meat of a raw bird, even in its raw state. So it's suitable to be eaten by a person on Shabbos, so therefore it's not muktza. Says Gemara Tama de Chazi L'Umtza. Apparently the reason why it's not muktza is because it's suitable to be eaten raw. L'umtza means in its raw state. But otherwise, it would be considered muktza. Apparently, Rava holds that although this bird can be fed to an animal, so it has another use to it, other than human consumption, that wouldn't be sufficient. That wouldn't be enough to make it not muktza. You need to be able to feed it to a person. It needs to be suitable for human consumption. Why? Because the bird is designated, is meant to be eaten by a person. Something which can be eaten by a person is not usually fed to animals. Therefore, apparently Rava seems to be working with the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, who has a broad application of muktza. He holds that something needs to be prepared, designated for Shabbos use, in order for it not to be considered muktza. As opposed to Rabbi Shimon, who maintains, well, only something which is inherently unsuitable, something which is actually useless, that's considered to be out of bounds, off limits, and muktza on Shabbos. But merely lacking preparation, that's not considered muktza. So Rabbi tells us that you can only move this piece of meat because a person can actually eat it. But otherwise, he would consider it muktza, despite the fact that technically it can be fed to an animal. That wouldn't suffice because it's not prepared for that purpose. It's not designated for that purpose. Therefore, it would be considered muktza. Says the Gemara Lememra, shall we say the Rava could be the Svirle, that Rava holds like a Yehuda, that lacking preparation equals muktza. V'amma Rava l'shame, didn't Rava tell a servant, Tavili bar avza, roast for me a duck, this is on Yom Tov, v'shadi mei l'shunra, and throw the meyayim, the stomach or the intestines, to the cat. Apparently he does not hold of Rabbi Yehuda by muktza. Why? Let's take a look at Rashi. Two lines from the bottom. Beginning with the words Rabbi Yehuda b'Mesachas Beitza, Tavali bar uvza b'yamtiv. So roast for me this bar avza, this duck, v'shadi mei l'shunra, and toss the me'ayim, the stomach, to the cat. Alma metatalu m'shunim shunra. Apparently, Rabbi allows him to move the me'ayim on account of the fact that it's suitable for a cat. V'afagav de idna l'chazi l'adam. Although currently on Yom Tov, it's not really suitable for human consumption. The owner wouldn't eat it. Because it's not really proper and appropriate to eat this type of food on Yom Tov. So really, it's unsuitable for Yom Tov use. However, yesterday when they shechted the bird, the duck, it was certainly designated, it was meant to be eaten by a person, and not designated for animal use. So how can he move this thing on Yom Tov? Since it was designated for human consumption currently, that's not available. So it should be muktza, because it wasn't prepared or designated for an animal use. So this thing is inherently unprepared for animals. It's meant to be eaten by a person. Right now a person can't eat it, so it's muktza. So apparently Rabbi who allows moving the Bnei Me'ayim, even on Yom Tov, does not hold of Rabbi Yehuda. Does not hold that lacking preparation. For instance, in this case, the fact that it's lacking the preparation for animal use, he doesn't hold that is considered muktza. So this seems to contradict the statement said earlier that the bird needs to be suitable for human consumption. The fact that it can feed it to an animal, that's not sufficient to remove the muktza status. So the two statements of Rava, the statement of Rava regarding the bird and the story regarding the duck seem to contradict each other. Says the Gemara Hassam over there by the duck, Kivan de Masrach, since he knows it's going to spoil, If he lingers, if he lets it sit around until nightfall, until after Yom Tov, when he finally can get to eat it, so he knows it's going to get spoiled. Dati iluvei mi esmel. So from yesterday already, when he shechted the duck, he already knew he's not going to leave it around. He's not going to end up eating it himself. Rather, he's going to give it to a cat on Yom Tov. So indeed, it was designated and prepared for that purpose. Continues the Gemara, Achinami Mistavra. It's actually pretty reasonable. The Rava Rabbi Yehuda Svirle. And indeed, Rava holds like Rabbi Yehuda by Muktzah. The Darish Rava, because Rava taught, he announced, Isha lo sikanes lebeis ha'itzim. A woman should not go into a woodshed, lito mehen oid ud, to remove from there a rod, a pole, because as Rashi explains, stam eitzim lahasokan nitnu. So speaking on Yontiv, that the wood is generally destined and designated to be used for firewood as fuel. And it wasn't prepared to be used for a rod for domestic use in the kitchen. Therefore, you can't use that wood for this purpose. Rava continued, number two, v'ud shenishbar, a rod which broke on Yom Tov, asur la'asika b'yontov, he can't use it as fuel. He can't burn it on Yom Tov. Why? L'fi shemasikim b'kelim, one is allowed to burn kelim. Vein masikim b'shivri kelim, but one may not use broken kelim, which had their status change on Yom Tov. It came into Yom Tov as a kli, as a utensil, and then it broke, and it's considered noilad. It's considered as though it's a new entity. It was created anew. It turned from a kli to a broken kli. Therefore, Koncha Yehuda, that's considered to be muktzah. This wasn't meant to be used in this manner. It's lacking achana, it's lacking preparation. Shema mina, says the more. Indeed, we hear from here that Rava concurs completely with Rabbi Yehuda with regard to muktzah, as we interpreted earlier from the story of the bird. Continues the Mishnah. One may remove from his table atzomah's bones, uklipin, peels, shells. Tosis explains that these things are roi for machal behema, is suitable for animal feed. So Bishamah maintains one can actually directly move them off the table. It can interact directly with the muktzah. It doesn't need to do it indirectly. Ubesil, I mean, no, you can't do it directly. Misalik esatavel kula. He can remove the entire board, the top board of the table, remove it umenara and shake it off and have the waste fall off indirectly. But he can't directly contact these items. Now, apparently, this machlekes is based on the discussion we had earlier regarding muktzah. Beis Shammai subscribes to Shitas Reb Shimon and holds that something which is lacking designation is not considered to be muktzah. For instance, these bones and peels, which were initially part of the food, when it was connected to the food, it was considered to be one and the same with the food. Now that it got separated from the food, and it's only suitable for animal feed, nevertheless, Reb Shimon maintains that's not muktzah, because it's not inherently useless. It's perfectly usable for an animal. Therefore, it's not muktzah. That's Shitas Beis Shammai. So you can go ahead, take off these items from his table, even though he's handling directly. However, Bishilil apparently subscribed to Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. That's something which change, has a status change on Shabbos. It turned from being a part of a food and now became animal feed. That's a change of status. It was transformed into something new. That's considered to be lacking. Lacking preparedness. It's considered to be something undesignated. Therefore, it's considered to be muktzah, and the only way he can remove it is by doing it indirectly, shaking off his table. Continues the Mishnah, a similar halacha ma'avir mifnei ha'shulchan, one way may remove from his table pirurin, small crumbs, pachas mikazais, smaller than a kazais, which is suitable for animal feed, v'seir shalafunin, the hair of beans. Farshim explained this to me, the pods, the inedible portion, the stalks, or the encasement of the peas, v'seir adashim, likewise, the inedible portion of the lentils, v'pneishu machal behemah, because these things can be fed to animals, therefore, they're not considered to be muktzah. Continues the Gemara, the Mishnah, sfoig, what about a sponge? Im yesh lo oyer beis achiza, if it has a leather handle, mekanachim boy, then one can go use it to wipe off his wet table, v'imla, but if it doesn't have this handle, He can't wipe his table because we're concerned that when this thing gets wet, he's going to squeeze it between his hands, between his fingers. So only if it has a handle, that removes that concern. Continues the Mishnah, benkech or benkech. Either way, nitl b'Shabbos, it can be handled on Shabbos, it's not muktzah. Rashi points out, we're speaking when it's dry. Ve'enim l'kabal tumah, however, it's not l'kabal tumah because for something to be l'kabal tumah, it needs to be listed in that list of various types of materials that the Torah presents as having the ability to l'kabal tumah, for instance, wood, beged, material, matechas, metal, but this sponge, perhaps we're speaking about a natural type of sponge. So anyways, this thing is not something which is makabel tum. So quick summary regarding the sfeig, regarding wiping with it, if it has a handle, that's okay. Otherwise, one should not use it. Regarding moving on Shabbos, that's perfectly allowed in either case. In either case, it's not makabel tum. Continues the Gemara. So getting back to the opening statement of the Mishnah, where Beishami say you can handle the mukseh directly, since it's suitable for animal feed. Bishami subscribes to Rabbi Shimon's Shita. Whereas Basil say you can only do it indirectly. Apparently they hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Amar Rabbi Nachman, Ein Anu Ein Lanu. We don't rely on the version stated in this Mishnah. Ella, rather, we must reverse things. Bishami Rabbi Yehuda, Ubeisilel Rabbi Shimon. Actually, the correct way is that Bishami hold that one cannot directly interact with this mukta, this animal feed, which is considered to be unprepared for its current use, so one must do it indirectly by shaking off the table. Whereas Beis Hillel indeed are the ones who are lenient, and they are the ones that hold like Reb Shimon. Continues the Gemara, Ma'avir from the Shulchan Pirurin. So he removes the crumbs, but he doesn't get rid, he doesn't throw them away, he doesn't destroy them. Mesayilei l'Rab Yechan, this is in support of Rab Yechan, the Amar, Rab Yechanon Pirurin she'en b'em kezayis, crumbs that are smaller than a kezayis, is smaller than a sheer achila, which is generally kezayis. Even so, also la abdom liyadu, one may not manually destroy them. He must treat them with respect. So he removes them from the table, but he doesn't destroy them. Continues the Gemara, Seir she'afunin. So the Mishnah listed a list of various materials which can be removed directly off the table. The pea pods, the lentil pods, etc., because they are suitable to be fed to animals. Says Ramani Rab Shimoni. Apparently, this Mishnah right now is following Rab Shita's Shita, the Leslie Mukta, who holds that there's no Mukta concerning. Let's take a look at Rashi right off to the side, on the right side, the Leslie Mukta. Apparently, we're following Rab Shimon. Why the Rab Yehuda? Because if we would be following Rab Yehuda's Shita, then we would have a problem. May esma lavel behem akaimi, because before Shabbos, meaning at the entry point of Shabbos, these materials were not suitable, were not designated for animal use. Shareya oichel hayimayin, because the food was with it, meaning it was part and parcel of the food. It was bottled to the food. It had a status of machal adam. Vayoyim lekech mehem. Today, he's removing the food from this inedible portion, turning it into animal feed, which is considered to be unprepared for that purpose. Because we work with the entry point of Shabbos to determine the status of something. In this case, it wasn't classified as animal feed at the entry point of Shabbos. It's considered to be technically unprepared for this purpose, for this use. So according to Rabbi, this would be muktzah. Apparently, the Mishnah here, which allows movement of these objects, is following Rabbi Shimon Shita, who holds that ultimately it's animal feed, it's suitable, therefore it's not muktzah. If so, Ema Seifa, let's take a look at the Seifa of the Mishnah. Regarding the sfeig, the sponge, sfeig mishlebeis achiza, if it has this handle, mekanchaboy, you can wipe with it vimla, but otherwise, ein mekanchaboy, you cannot wipe with it on Shabbos. Asan Rabbi Yehuda, apparently this follows Rabbi Yehuda's shita, the Omar, dover, shem, neskaven, asr. When a person does a maisa which results in an incidental malacha taking place, which wasn't really part of his initial intention, it's a dover, shem, neskaven, it's still asr. So apparently the concern here with the sponge, of follows Rabbi Yehuda's Shita, because he's not being miskaven, he has no intent to squeeze a sponge out of its liquid and do a malacha of dash. He's merely trying to sop up the moisture on his table. Apparently we're following Shita's Rabbi Yehuda, and not Shita's Rabbi Shimon, who holds that a davar shein miskaven is mutter. So we seem to have a theory here. One portion of the Mishnah says, well, there's no muktzah because we're following Rabbi Shimon. Then the Mishnah proceeds with the issur of davar shein miskaven, which is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Says the Gemara, Baha, in this case, Afilu Rav Shimon might, even Rav Shimon agrees that it's also because it's inevitable that the moisture, the liquid, will get squeezed out of this sponge if it doesn't have a handle. Baha, Afilu Rav Shimon, Moida, Dabai, but Rabba, Damri, Tavayu. Abai and Rabba both said, Moida, Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon agrees to Rav Yehuda, Bipsik Reishi, Veloyamus. If one chops off the head of a chicken, you expect it not to die, it's inevitable. Here as well, it's inevitable that the moisture will become squeezed out of the sponge if it doesn't have a handle. Therefore, even if Shimon holds that it's also. Continues the Gemara. Hanigar inen. Regarding these pits, the tamri armaisa. The date pits. Tamri are dates and armaisa are poor quality dates. Which are dates which are fed to animals as well. Therefore, the pits are not considered to be muktza, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, because the entire fruit, the entire date, with the pit inside, can be technically fed and is designated also for animals. So there was no status change. There was no transformation. When he pulled the pit out of the date, it began as animal feed and ended as animal feed. So therefore, shori l'tiltolinu, one may move the pits, hoil v'chazyan, since they're suitable, agav imon, on account of their mother, meaning on account of the fruit, while it was still in the date. It was all classified as animal feed as well. So even according to Rabbi Yehuda, it would be okay. Ude parsiyaisa also, however, pits from the high quality dates, the parsiyaisa dates, that's also because, of course, we're speaking about Rabbi Yehuda Shita, because initially it was prepared, it was designated strictly for human consumption. Then when he pulls the date out of the pit out of the date, that pit has now taken on a new identity. It's no longer regarded as part of a machal adam. It is now regarded as machal behema and considered to be unprepared for that purpose. And therefore it's mukta. Continues the Gemara, Shmuel metaltel luhu. He would move around these pits, agar rifta. He would move them on account of bread. So we're speaking about the high quality date pits. So despite the fact that they're mukta, he would place them on a piece of bread and then carry them in that manner. Now Tosfos explains that Shmuel technically held that there was no muksa consideration at all, because he holds like Reb Shimon that these are not considered to be muksa since they're suitable for animal feed. Rather, he was concerned about perhaps creating the wrong impression. He was concerned about public perception, lest they derive some type of leniency from what he's doing. Therefore, he need to be extra careful, and he did it in this manner. He did a derech chumrah to use it, to move it around only with the bread. Now the fact that he used bread for this purpose, says the Gemara, apparently indicates that Shmuel letamei. Shmuel is concurring with his own opinion stated elsewhere, the Amar Shmuel, Oysa Adam kol tzarchu apas. One may use bread for all his needs, as long as he doesn't actually degrade the bread. But for instance, in this case, that he's using the bread to allow him to move the muktzah, that's okay. Continues the Gemara with several other descriptions of other Amirayim, how they handle these pits. Rabba metaltalu agav lekana demaya. He would move around these pits on account of a bucket of water. So he would place the pit inside, and he would carry it indirectly on account of this bucket. So this is a way of avoiding direct contact with the muktza. Ravun rei davishua avad lukigraf shel rei. He did as follows. He went ahead and he piled up these pits before him until they became so many that he became repulsed from it. It was mos. It was like a grav shel rei, meaning a utensil which contains waste. Where the chacham allowed a person to actually lift this muktza item to get it out of the way on account of its repulsiveness. Here as well, he formed this mountain, this mound of this pile of date pits until it became mos, had a status of a grav shel rei, and then he had no problem directly handling these pits and moving them out of the way. Can one go ahead and form this grav shel rei lechatchila, initiate it? Okay, if it's there, you remove it, but go ahead and fashion this pile of date pits, which is something repulsive, which will compel him to move muktza? So Rav Ashi didn't agree with this approach. Apparently, Rav Huna Brei Yeshua held, that's okay, because he's not bringing something repulsive here. He's merely eating. It's derech achila. It's resulting in a pile of pits being created. That's okay. It's simply a consequence of his eating activity, and therefore there's no concern of the fact that he's making Rav Shorei Chathchila. It's simply a product of circumstance, and certainly once it reaches the point that it repulses him, he can go ahead and remove it. Continues the Gemara, Sheshes Zorek will be Lishnei. He would toss them to the other side of the on the other side of the table using his tongue, so he avoided direct contact with these pits. Rav Papa Zorek Lachur Amita. He would throw them behind his bed. This way, they just landed there, out of the way, out of sight. He didn't need to go ahead and remove them any further. Apparently, Rav Papa threw it using his hands. He didn't insist on using his tongue. He simply took it out of his mouth and tossed it aside. Apparently, he held, even though he's directly touching it, it's not really called direct interaction with muktzah, because it's called part of the eating process, removing the pit out of one's mouth. It's just part of the eating procedure. So therefore, it's not considered to be a direct contact with muktzah. He simply took it out of his mouth and tossed it aside. Concludes the Gemara, Omru Olav Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulos. So they related regarding Rabbi Zechariah that he did as follows. So Yemachzer Ponav Achor Amita, he would turn his face, he would turn himself behind the bed, Rashi says the bed that he was lying on when he ate. So he would turn around, Vizarkon, and he would toss it behind the bed. This way he avoided contact with these pits altogether. So it seems like these Amoraim would conduct themselves in a stringent manner to avoid this whole discussion, this whole interaction with the pits of which were extracted from these dates. So in summary, we learned regarding things that are suitable for animal feed, which are sitting on a person's table, for instance, atzomos klipin, peirudin, little crumbs, seyar of afunin, adoshin, edibles of these peas and beans. So Gemara told us that according to Rabbi Yehuda, which is actually Shitas Beis Shammai now Mishnah, according to the reverse version of the Gemara, so he holds that you can't directly remove those items. They're considered to be muktzah since they weren't pre-designated before Shabbos for this use. They simply came about on Shabbos when they were separated from their foods. Therefore, you can shake off the tavla, the board of the table, without directly touching the muktzah. According to Shitas Bishilu, which is Shitas Reb Shimon, there's no concern with muktzah. You can actually remove these objects directly from his table without any concern. Regarding date pits, Gemara tells us the low-quality pits, garine of tamarim armiyaisa, all agree. Since those dates were really also meant for animal feed, the pit therein is no different. And therefore, even according to Yehuda, there was no change of status. It is not muktzah Shabbos. Regarding the high-quality date pits, the garine of the parsiyaisa, we have a machlekes. According to Yehuda, that's considered to be a change of status. He's going from a food to an animal feed. Whereas according to Shimon, there's no concern of muktzah since this pit is inherently suitable for animal feed. The Gemara related several amiroim who conduct themselves in various methods to avoid the muktzah. Shmo would use bread. We have using the lukana de maya, the bucket of water. We have piling it up and applying the aloha of graf shel rei. We have tossing it with his tongue, or somebody taking it out of his mouth and tossing it behind his bed. Hadron aloch noitel adam es benai. Continues the Mishnah. Chavis shenishbro. If there's a barrel that broke apart on Shabbos, for instance, there's some wine in there, can he go ahead and salvage the content? Matzilin himena, mozon shel sudais. One may salvage an amount equal to 3 sudais. Why not more? There's a concern that if he gets overly involved, he's going to bring utensils to Rishus Rabim, and he'll do the melacha v'etzah. V'oim l'acher, now this fellow whose barrel broke apart, he can go turn to others and say, look, boyu batzil lachem, come, save for yourself as well. Each one of you can go ahead and save the amount needed for 3 sudas. U'bavash l'yisfek, provided it doesn't actually sop it up, absorb it in a sponge. There's a concern that if he does that, perhaps he's going to squeeze the sponge and do a melacha. Continues the Mishnah. One may not squeeze fruits in order to extract this juice. That's considered to be a malacha. Which malacha? Dash. It's actually mefarik, which is a toilot, a derivative of dash. Dash means extracting the grain from its encasement. Here as well, he's taking a fruit, which is a food item, and creating juice from it. He's extracting juice from that fruit, that's considered to be Amlacha Matar. Now what about if he sees juice flowing out of his fruit? Vim Yotsu Ma'asman, if the juice is simply flowing out, freely flowing out of his uncrushed fruit, Asurin. He cannot partake in them. Why? Because he can't drink the juice. Why? Because we're concerned that if he sees juice coming out, he might be tempted to actually continue the process and crush the fruit, squeeze it, and do a malacha. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he says it depends. Im lo eichlin, if the reason for him gathering these fruits, the reason for him storing the fruit was for the sake of eating it, he never had an intention of squeezing them and producing juice. In which case, there's no concern. Hayotzimem mutter, the juice which exudes out of this fruit, is mutter because he doesn't even want the juice. He wanted to eat the fruit. There's no concern that he's going to go ahead and be tempted to squeeze it. V'yomamashkin, however, if he initially stored the fruit for the sake of juice, to produce juice out of the fruit, then hayotzimem aser be the grease, the juice emanating from this fruit, is aser for concern that he might be tempted to actually squeeze the fruit further. Concludes the Mishnah, Chalis Dvash Sheriska Merv Shabbos. What about honeycombs, which he had already crushed from before Shabbos? V'yotzu Ma'atzmon, and the honey is simply flowing out, freely flowing on its own. Asurin, he cannot partake in that honey, because we're concerned that perhaps he's going to go ahead and crush an uncrushed honeycomb. Rabbi Elazar Mater, he says it's mutter because this honeycomb has already been crushed. There's nothing to crush any further. And we're not concerned that on account of this, this will lead him to actually crush an uncrushed comb. It's mutter. Let's take a look at Rashi. Up on top of the Amud Chavis, Matzil and Amenu Mazin Gibel Seudais, he can salvage the amount needed for three Seudais. Vafilu B'Kelem Harbi. Even if he has many utensils required to salvage this amount. Dilu B'Chat Mana. However, if it's only one utensil that he's using, Arminu B'Kol Kisvei HaKadosh. We learned earlier in Perikol Kisvei, the Kamad B'Yu Matzil. As much as he would like, he can salvage. Since it's merely in one container, it's one act of salvaging. So even if it's a large container, there's no concern. Lochem, so he turns to others and he says, go save for yourself. Kol echad mazin gimel sudas. Each one of you has the privilege to go save three sudas. Uvavad shalo yispoig, provide that he doesn't sop the juice, shalo yosem sfoig mokamayayin, he doesn't place a sponge on the wine, lachsor latite bikli, to go ahead and place it in a kli, to have a drip, gzer sham yischait. Perhaps that will lead him to actually squeezing it, which is the lacha derais. Ein seich den esat peiris, one may not squeeze fruit, tavel mefarik. It's considered to be unloading Toda the Disha, which is a derivative of the Malchav Disha. Now, if the juice is just simply flowing out on its own, Asur, why? Gzeru Shem Yisrod Chathila. We're concerned this might lead him to actually squeeze the fruit. Rabbi Doim, Imel Eichlin. Hey, Mechunosum Oysen Peres. If those fruit were stored initially for the sake of eating them, Hayoitzim and Mutter, then the juice emanating is Mutter. Deloy Nichalev Masha Zavo. He's not really pleased with the juice flowing out of his fruit of a lekel and mixer by him. There's no reason to be concerned, Shema Yischait, that perhaps he will go ahead and squeeze that fruit. However, if they were stored for production of juice, Asurin, then he cannot partake in the juice flowing out of it. The Nichale. But by the Nafkamenayu, he's pleased with the juice flowing out of them. His intention has been fulfilled. In this case, there's a reason to be geyser, to be concerned, Shema Yischait. Perhaps this will lead him to actually continue the process and squeeze the fruit. This is what the Gemara tells us in Beitza, the Tamad, the Mashkin Suzavu. The reason why one may not drink juice which is flowing freely from the fruit, Mishum Shema Yischait, is the reason is perhaps he might go ahead and squeeze the fruit. Chalis Dvash, these honeycombs, Ma'achashem Rusakim. Once they've been crushed, hadvash zov me'elav b'teich hashava, the honey freely flows out of the wax. There's no reason. It's not customary to go ahead and crush it further. Hilchah lezer matter. However, v'chachavim oishrim gzera atu sh'enim rusakin d'mon rasiklu. We're concerned that perhaps if we allow him this might lead him to actually go ahead and crush an uncrushed honeycomb. Continues the Gemara. Tana, we learned in the Brice, regarding a barrel which broke apart, lo yispeg b'yayin. He shouldn't go ahead and mop up the wine. V'lo yitafech b'shemen. He shouldn't go ahead and tap the oil with his hands, and this way he's going to gather the oil. So the reason for the first halacha of Yispek B'Yayin, Rashi already told us, is a concern of schita. And the reason why he can't sop up the oil using his hands is for a different reason. So he doesn't conduct himself in a manner which resembles a weekday activity, getting involved in this job of gathering the oil, resembles a weekday activity. It's considered to be a derech shu'ois b'chol. Now Tosfos actually learns that this reason applies to the sopping up of the wine as well, because he's learning that this sfoigir is even when it has a handle. As we learned earlier, there's no concern with using such a type of sponge. Nevertheless, in this case, it's usur. If it's going around and sopping up, mopping up the wine, or the oil is regarded as a derech choil. Now what's wrong with doing something derech choil? The Farshim give various reasons. Raman points out that if he gets overly involved in this weekday activity, it might lead him to do a malacha. Others say, well, Shabbos activity is meant to be clearly different than the weekday activities. He's meant to establish a clear demarcation between Shabbos activities and weekday activities. Therefore, he can't conduct himself in this manner. Tana Rabbanan, we learned a similar halacha in a brayso, espazerli peres b'chatzer. If one's fruit scattered about throughout the yard, milaket al yad v'oichel, he can take a little bit at a time and eat it. Tosfos points out, we don't strictly require him to go and eat it. It simply means that he should do it in an inefficient manner, meaning, he shouldn't gather it into a basket or into a box, so he doesn't do his activity in a manner which is similar to a weekday activity. So he shouldn't gather them into a basket, into a box. Rather, he should take them, Rashi says, Tosfos says, he should gather him into his garment, do it in a way which deviates from the norm. Continues the Gemara. So we learned in the Mishnah Esech, now Paris, one may not squeeze fruit. Regarding juice, which is freely flowing from his unsqueezed fruit, the Tanakhama says, the Shidas HaChama hold, that it's aser for concern that he might go and squeeze fruit. Ravida says, depends. Depends. It's based on the intent, the initial intent when he stored that fruit. If it was the purpose of eating the fruit, then there's no concern. If the purpose was to produce mashkin, a beverage from the fruit, then indeed Rav Yehuda agrees is a concern. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Moi Dehaya, Rav Yehuda L'Chachamim, Rav Yehuda agreed to the Chachamim, Bezeisim Banavim, regarding juice flowing out of uncrushed olives, Zeisim, uncrushed grapes, Anavim. In this case, Rav Yehuda agrees is a concern. We can't allow him to use the oil, use that grape juice. Why? My time. Why? Mikiven L'Schita Ninu, since these are designated for crushing, for squeezing. Everybody crushes olives and grapes. These are the primary items, crushing items. Therefore, Yoiv Daite, he will place his mind on it, meaning when he sees the juice flowing out of it, although he initially had no intention of producing oil or grape juice from these fruit, nevertheless, since he sees the juice flowing out of it, he changes his mind, says, oh, nice idea, let me go ahead and produce oil or grape juice. So if Rav Yehuda agrees, when it comes to Zeisim Banavim, we don't differentiate based on intention. V'ula Amar Rav, so you said the name of Rav, Cholkaya Rav Yehuda, Af B'Zeisim Banavim, Rav Yehuda actually disagreed, even regarding olives and grapes. Rav Yochanan Amar, Halacha Rav Yehuda B'Shar Peres. Rav Yochanan likewise maintains that this Machlekes was all-encompassing. It applied even to Zeisim Anavim. Rabbi Yehuda holds that even there, if the storage was for the sake of eating them, it would be mutter. However, Rabbi Yochanan says the halacha differentiates between the various types of fruit. Halach Rabbi Yehuda b'shar peres. The halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda regarding other types of fruits, where if he had intended merely to store it for eating purposes, we're not concerned that he's going to go ahead and squeeze it. Ve'ein halach Rabbi Yehuda b'zeisim anavim. However, we do not follow Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, Rabbi Yehuda's lenient approach when it comes to Zeisim Anavim, which are primarily used for this purpose. Therefore, over there, it carries a greater concern that perhaps he's going to be tempted to squeeze it. So according to this approach, the Machlokes applies to Zeisim Anavim, where Rabbi Yehuda is mounted there as well, if he gathered it l'achila. The Machlokes applies to other fruits also. The halacha differentiates. When it comes to other fruits, we agree with Rabbi Yehuda that he's not so inclined to go ahead and squeeze them. Therefore, if his intention was for consumption, to eat the actual fruit, then there's no concern. Whereas when it comes to zeisim ba'anavim, which are primarily used for this purpose, for squeezing purposes, in that case, we agree with the Rabbanim that once the juice starts flowing out, he might change his mind. Although initially he intended on eating them, he might decide to actually squeeze them for their juice purpose. Continues the Gemara. Omar Rabba, Omar Rav Yehuda Dizashita, Omar Rav Abba, Omar Rav Yehuda Mashmol. So we have another approach, the name of Shmuel. He learns as follows. Moida hoy Rav Yehuda l'chachamim b'zeisim anov. Rav Yehuda actually agreed to the chachamim when it comes to zeisim anov. This was what we mentioned earlier in the beginning of the segment of the Gemara. And when it comes to zeisim anov, Rav Yehuda agrees, there's no machlekes. And why? The Gemara gave us a reason, because the schita ninu, since they're really meant to be squeezed, the olives and grapes are primarily used in this manner. So there's a real concern, even according to Yehuda, even though he gathered it for eating purposes, once he sees the juice flowing out, he might be tempted to squeeze them. So Rav Yehuda agrees by zeisim anov that it's also. Likewise, umoydim chacham Rav Yehuda b'shar peres. Chacham would agree to Rav Yehuda when it comes to other varieties of fruit, which are not some things which are generally squeezed for their juice value. Chacham agreed to Rav Yehuda regarding those fruits, if he gathered them, if he stored them, with the intent of eating them, there's no concern at all for schita. So we have two sides of the coin. When it comes to objects which are slated for crushing, zeisim anavim, all agree that the juice emanating would be aser for concern that he might squeeze this object. On the other side of the coin, we have sharp pears, other types of fruits, which are not used for crushing. In that case, all agree the juice emanating would be aser, would be mutter. There was no concern of him squeezing it since he had gathered it together, he had stored it for the sake of eating the actual fruit. Continues the Gemara. Amar le Rav Yirmiyah Rav Abba. So Rav Yirmiyah challenged Rav Abba. If so, there's no machlekes. All agree regarding everything. When it comes to zeisim anavim, all agree that it's aser. Regarding other fruit, all agree that it's mutter. El b'may pligiv. So when is there a machlekes between the chachamim who say juice will be aser, and Rav Yehuda holds that free-flowing juice coming out of fruit which were stored for eating purposes is mutter? What category are they speaking? Amar leh, so he responded, l'chi sishkach. When you go ahead and invest your mental effort and you go investigate, you'll figure it out. Amar Nachman Yitzchak Mistaver is logical, is reasonable, that the machlekes actually pertains betusim v'rimoinim pligi. The machlekes is regarding berries and pomegranates, which is an in-between category. It's not something which is primarily used for crushing, nor is it something which people don't crush. Some people would crush it. So it's that in-between state, where some would and some won't. There, we have a machlekes between the chacham and say, well, we're concerned. If he sees the juice coming out, he might be tempted to crush it. Which Rav Yehuda says, if he gathered and stored it for actual consumption of the fruit itself, there's no concern. If he sees some juice coming out of it, he'll change his mind. In his mind, this thing is food. It's not something which is slated for crushing. And therefore, there's no concern. Let's see Rashi inside. So Rashi here is around 25 lines from the top, beginning with the words, Moide Rav Yehuda b'zeisim. So the Gemara tells us that Rav Yehuda agrees to the Chachamim regarding juice flowing out of olives, despite the fact that he stored them for their food value to eat them, not to produce oil from them. Hayoytzimen asur. The juice which flows out of them is asur. Why? The kivan the Ruben l'schita kaimi. Since the majority of the grapes and the olives are slated for squeezing and crushing to produce oil, to produce wine. That's why ki asur de mashke. So when these fruits have turned into juice, he sees juice flowing out of them. He decides, he has a change of mind, decides, well, it's a good idea, let me go ahead and use it for that purpose and squeeze it into juice. This is one approach to the Gemara. The other approach was, no, Rabbi disagrees even when it comes to these types of fruit. Why? Since these particular ones were stored and gathered for the sake of food. Therefore, there's no concern that he's going to squeeze them. And getting back to the first approach, which are Shmuel's approach, we have three categories. When it comes to fruits which are generally crushed, the majority of them are slated for crushing, or Rebbe agrees is a concern. When it comes to fruits which are never crushed, or even the Chacham would agree that there's no concern whatsoever that he's going to crush them. The Machlokes is regarding that middle ground. Mistavra betusim remoinim pligi. It is rational that Machlokes is regarding tusim berries remoinim pomegranates. Because that's the middle ground, the middle category. Dika de boi lulamashkin. Because some people use them for their beverage value. Some people crush them. Hilkoch mashu rabbonu kizesvanam. That's what the Chacham regard them. Tantamount to olives and grapes. So although he initially gathered them for the sake of eating them, but once he sees the juice coming out, he might decide, well, good idea, let me go crush them, let me go squeeze them. Rabbi Yehuda Poligalai, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, because once he decided that he's going to use them for their food value, there's no reason to think it's going to change his mind. There's no chashash of schit. That's the middle ground. The berries and the pomegranates. Aval, but the third category, shar peiros, other types of fruits, leka debor lamashkin. Nobody requires them for their beverage value. Therefore, the Rabbanan agrees certainly when it comes to other types. There's no concern of schita. Juice emanating from them are certainly mutter. And the first one point out that it depends on the location, depends on the minhag hamakom, what is customary in that place, what types of fruits are generally used for squeezing. But in any case, we have three categories. We have the zeisim anavim, which are slated for squeezing. All agreed there's a concern of schita. We have on the other side of the spectrum other types of fruits which are never crushed. All agreed there's no concern there. We have the middle category of the tusim remoinim, which is sometimes used for their beverage value. That's where we have the machlekes. When he stored them for their food value, shall we say, well, he might change his mind and decide to crush them. That's the shittas rabbanan. Which Rebbe says, once he made up his mind that he intends on actually eating them, there's no reason to believe that he's going to change his mind, decide to use them and squeeze them for their beverage value. Continues the Gemara. Omar Nachma Yitzchak, again, Mestavar Betusun Moinim Pligi, it is logical that the Machlokes pertains to that middle category of berries and pomegranates. This Sanya is learned in the Brice. Zeisim Shemashach Men Shemen. If one has olives, in which the oil is flowing freely from the olives, they were an uninstigated flow, Va'anovim Shemashach Men Yain, where he has grapes, where the wine is simply flowing from his grapes. Now, V'ichnisan, initially when he gathered them and he stored them, Bein lo oichel bein lo mashkem, whether it was for the sake of eating them or for the sake of producing juice. Hayoytzim en aser, juice coming out of it is aser, because there's a concern that if he sees the juice coming out of it and he uses it, he might be inclined to squeeze them, because these are things that are generally used for the beverage value. However, tusim, berries, shemashal men, mayim, where the water or the juice is flowing from them, v'rimayim shemashal men, yayin, or pomegranates which have their juice flowing, then it depends. V'yichnisan lo oichlin, if he initially store them to eat them, hayotzim en mutter, the juice coming out of his mutter, there's no concern that he'll be tempted to squeeze them. Le'mashkin, but if he intended on using them for the beverage value, ulestam, or he had no intention either way, he had no kavana one way or the other, in this case, there's a concern that if he sees juice coming out of it, he might actually squeeze. Hayoytzim en aser, the juice coming out of it is aser. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, who says that by zeisim anavim, I agree there's a real concern when it comes to that middle category of pomegranates or berries, which are sometimes used for the beverage value, then it depends on his intention. V'chachamim aymer, bein lo'ichlam elamashkin, whether he stored them for eating purposes or to produce juice, hayoytzim en aser, the juice coming out of it is aser. Whether we're speaking about zeisim or manim, which are primarily used for crushing and squeezing for their beverage value, or even that middle category of berries and pomegranates, we are concerned, regardless of his intention, whether you store them for food or for beverage value, juice that comes out is aser, we're concerned they might go ahead and squeeze it on Shabbos. So in summary, we learned that one may not squeeze fruit to produce juice on Shabbos. What about the mashkim that came in on their own? Shmuel presents us with three categories. We have three types of fruits. We have the zeisim v'anovim, which are the highest category, which are primarily designated for squeezing purposes. In this case, all agree the juice coming out of it is also, whether he stored them for eating purposes, whether he had no intention one way or the other, stam, or certainly when he stored them for their mashke purposes, It's asr, lest he go ahead and squeeze them. Regarding other fruits which are never squeezed to produce juice, all agree that it's mutter, whether he gathered for oichlim or he gathered for mashkim. Regarding that middle ground, the tusim remaining, which are sometimes used for their beverage value, in this case we have achlikas. If he stored them for mashkin to produce juice, all agree it would be asr. Whereas if he stored them lo oichlim for the sake of eating them, we really hold it's mutter, because he designated for food purposes. Whereas Chacham maintained that's asr. Perhaps he's going to change his mind, decide to squeeze it for his beverage value. Okay, time for a brief review of today's daf. We learned that if one has bones, shells on his table, these things are suitable for animal feed. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's considered to be muktzah, because at the onset of Shabbos, they were connected and a part of food meant for a person. They had a status of human food. Therefore, when they change status and turn into animal feed, they're considered to be unprepared and undesignated for this purpose, and they're muktzah. The only way to remove them is by shaking off the table. Whereas according to Rabbi Shimon, since they're inherently useful, he can feed them to his animal, they're not considered to be muktzah, and he can directly handle them, he can remove them off his table. Regarding date pits, well, if they're low quality dates, which are generally fed to animals as well, then all agree that there was no change of status when the pit is extracted from these dates. It began as animal feed and it ended as animal feed. All agree they're not muktzah. Regarding the pits of high quality dates, then involves the machlekes and Ridam Shimon. The more related several methods of discarding of these pits and avoiding the topic of muktzah. Regarding a sponge, so if it has a handle, one can go ahead and sop up some, absorb some juice with it. Whereas if it has no handle, he cannot use it to sop up liquid for concern that he might squeeze the sponge. In either case, whether or not it has a handle, he can move this sponge on Shabbos if it's dry and it is not mekabel tumah. We learned in the Mishnah, if a barrel breaks up on Shabbos, he can go ahead and salvage an amount needed for three meals. He shouldn't mop it up with a sponge lest he go ahead and squeeze that sponge. And we looked in the Gemara that he shouldn't do something which resembles a weekday activity as well. Regarding squeezing juice out of fruit, he can't do that on Shabbos. What if there's free-flowing juice coming out of his fruit? Shmuel tells us we have three categories. Fruit which are generally meant for squeezing purposes, for their juice and beverage value, zeisim anavim, in this case. The juice flowing out of it is asur according to all shittas, regardless of the circumstance. Regarding fruit which are never used for the beverage value, all agree that it's mutter because there's no concern of squeezing. We have that middle ground, tusim v'rimayim, which are sometimes used for the beverage value. That way, machlekes. According to Rabbi Yehuda, if he stored them to actually eat them, then there's no concern that he's going to squeeze them. Whereas according to Chachamim, even in this case, there's a concern that he might change his mind when he sees the juice flowing out of it. He might come to squeeze it. All agree, if he stored these fruits for the sake of mashkin to produce juice from them, all agree that the flowing juice would be usher for concern that he might go ahead and complete the process and squeeze the fruit on Shabbos.